Have any of you ever been scuba diving? No hands going up?
Oh, brilliant. Oh, a couple. Good.
Well, those of you who have will know that it's a wonderful sport, but if you really want to get into it, then you have to do quite a lot of training. I was quite into it quite a few years ago now, and I did most of my training in Zanzibar. One of the really memorable aspects of learning to dive was going really deep, which in scuba terms means about 30 metres or 100 feet. At that depth, you notice a number of significant changes. The weight of the air in your oxygen tank increases, so it becomes harder to breathe. And every movement requires a bit more effort, and you get tired quite easily. You might also be affected by something called nitrogen narcosis. I won't go into the biochemistry of it because I don't understand it. But basically what this does is it affects your judgment and your reasoning and your short-term memory and concentration. I remember very well my instructor, Mohammed, making me kneel on the ocean floor beside a shipwreck and asking me with an underwater pencil and slate to do a very simple maths sum, which I simply couldn't do because my brain was so addled. I think the symptoms have more or less worn off now. But the really significant thing about deep diving is that you lose visibility. We all know, don't we, that white light is in fact made up of different colours. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, Roigabiv, as we were all taught at school, probably. And as sunlight penetrates the water, different colours of the spectrum start to disappear at different depths. So if you dive down the face of an underwater cliff, for example, you can actually see the light disappearing bit by bit, colour by colour, as the corals and seaweeds and fish gradually lose their rainbow effect as you descend. It doesn't take very long at all for all the bright yellows and oranges to vanish completely. And quite soon you're in a world of dark greens and deep blues. It's as if all the bright riches and variety of life simply drain away before your eyes. Only if you have an underwater torch can you see that life in the depths is just as bright and colourful as it was near the surface. Well, that's all very interesting, you may say, but we didn't come to church this morning to hear about the Archdeacon's exotic leisure pursuits. What's all this got to do with Christianity? Let me try and explain my thinking. In my experience, there are times when my spiritual life is ablaze, so to speak, with light and colour. And I know that other people have similar moments when a sort of transcendent light seems to shine brightly upon them. Maybe in an experience of worship, or in a time of silence, or maybe as they wonder at the beauty of nature, or are awed by the face of a newborn child. Experiences like this are real spiritual highlights to be enjoyed by us and cherished. But they don't last, do they? Life goes on, and we descend into everyday routine, and the brightness gets filtered out as our minds and hearts sink beneath the waves of everyday humdrum existence. This seems to be a normal pattern of spiritual experience. It happens to everyone, even the greatest of saints. But it raises a question. Is there anything we can do actively to seek out the full colour of existence, even in the humdrum every day? Because as Christians, we believe that God is everywhere present, filling all things. So how can we become aware of that reality? Is there a spiritual equivalent of a diver's underwater torch? This is where I want to turn to today's gospel reading, in which we heard the story of Simeon and Anna meeting the infant Jesus in the temple. And I wonder whether we might read it as an insight into spiritual vision. I mean, there must have been tens of families, who knows, maybe even hundreds of them, presenting their children in the temple on the same day that Mary and Joseph showed up. And there was nothing about the Holy Family to mark them out as special. It's not as if they were going round with halos above their heads. So how did Simeon and Anna recognise one special baby among all the others? How could they see the presence of God within the normal pattern of life? I think the answer may lie in how they were introduced to us. We're told that Simeon was righteous and devout, and Anna never left the temple but worshipped there with fasting and prayer, night and day. In other words, Simeon and Anna were people who had well-established habits of devotion, religious practices. If I'm right about this, then maybe the ability to discern the presence of God, to see God's glory shining through even in everyday life, comes to a large extent by faithful religious practice. I'm talking about the ordinary bread and butter of the Christian spiritual life, saying our prayers, gathering for worship, serving others, reading the Bible, practicing silence. These are the simple habits that help us tune in to God, so to speak. They refine and purify our vision and train us to look for the light of God's presence in our lives and in the world around us. Though it's true that Simeon and Anna were model examples of this, there's nothing especially difficult about any of it. You just have to do it. This was quite a large part of the meaning of Jesus' presentation in the temple, which we celebrate today. Luke tells us three times in his account that Mary and Joseph were fulfilling the rites required by the law. In other words, they were settling Jesus into the pattern of religious practice that would shape him as he grew. And we're told that he did indeed grow and become strong and be filled with wisdom and the grace of God. If even Jesus, the Son of God, had to immerse himself in those habits of devotion, then surely so must we. It's both the foundation and the scaffolding that supports a deepening spiritual life and an awareness of God in our lives. When a bishop or an archdeacon visits a parish to induct someone as vicar, it's usual to give a kind of charge, to set out for the new priest and congregation some priorities for their ministry together. Now obviously this is a slightly unusual case because Simon has been with you for several years already. So today I want to acknowledge and give thanks for all the good things that are going on here. There is much colour and light. I can see it and experience it. And rather than try and set you off on a new course, it seems good just to underline those foundations and the scaffolding of church life. As your vicar, Simon's job is to keep watch over your common life and to make sure that you don't forget to ask, where is God in all of this? And to practice the spiritual arts of seeking God's presence, so that he and you, like Jesus, may grow and become strong, filled with wisdom and the grace of God. May it be so.